Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Paradressage podcast. We are continuing in our series of talking to people who will be making their Paralympic Games debut in a few weeks' time over in Tokyo in Japan at the Paralympic Games, which start in about 3 weeks' time. So very happy to introduce from Ireland, from Team Ireland, is Michael Murphy. Michael, welcome to the Paradressage podcast.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So it's really good to get the chance to speak to you and find out a bit more about you. So you ride for Ireland. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you though, is that just a few weeks ago at the Hartbury Festival of Dressage here in the UK, you had an absolutely brilliant week, I think it's fair to say, didn't you?
Yeah, it went pretty well. You know, going into it, we were in good form and feeling good. And my horse Charlie is of very, very high quality, and he always performs really well, especially on the big occasions. So I felt good going into it, but I wasn't really expecting that level of results. Just every time we ride a test, it just seems to be better than the last one. So yeah, I'm definitely not complaining.
But you got three wins, didn't you? You got the team test and the individual and the freestyle test in the grade one, which is a competitive grade. And Sophie Christensen was riding that week as well. So you beat Sophie, which is not something many, many people can say. So, yeah. So just a really good week and the best possible preparation for Tokyo. You've been confirmed on the Irish team. What was that like when you got that call to tell you that you were going?
Yeah, I think kind of anyone who's been selected for the first time will tell you that it's really an amazing feeling. You kind of put all the work in for the years building up to it, and then the selections, and then there's really that moment of relief. I was fortunate enough to be away with my friends when I got the call. So I was already in an environment where I could kind of celebrate. So it was definitely, a lot of celebrations, a lot of relief, and then just a lot of excitement for actually going and just looking forward to being at games.
It will be. And even though it's going to be a very different kind of games, I think, I don't know if you feel like this, but watching the Olympics this week, so when we record this, we're on, I think, day four or five of the Olympic Games. And while, yes, there's no crowds, it still has that magic, doesn't it? It's the watching the Olympics is the same experience. It's still brilliant sports people at their absolute peak doing wonderful things. And I guess the same will be the case at the Paralympics, won't it? So even though you're going to the COVID Games, your Paralympic experience will be just as magical. You must be looking forward to that.
Yeah, definitely. I think one question I've been asked quite a lot, or kind of people have said to me quite a lot, is it's a shame that there are no fans there, or it won't quite be the same. But for me personally, I don't really mind that much, because it's still a games. You still get that feeling when you're there watching it on TV. It still feels the same, and the excitement around it. So yeah, I don't mind too much. The competition is still, you know, everyone in the world is still there, still the best of the best. And that's really the point.
And then just one more thing on Hartbury is that you managed to break that 80% mark as well. Is that the first time you'd managed to do that at a three-star competition? Or
Yeah, definitely. I think I broke my personal best by about 10%. it was crazy. I mean, I think the highlight of that score was just, my brother was there, and he doesn't really know much about para dressage or anything and like that. And he celebrated when he saw the 80%, like he was at a football match and his team had scored. And I think that was quite a nice moment for me. So it definitely was the first 80 is definitely a big deal.
Excellent. So let's talk about you and your riding career itself then. So you were born with, I practiced saying this a moment ago, and I want to say Desjardins Sotas.
Yeah, that's close enough.
Excellent. So that's a nerve condition. Can you just describe the condition that you live with and what that means for you?
Yeah, so I was born with it, and it affects my peripheral nerves all around my body, and they slowly degenerate over time and fade away. So that causes kind of poor motor control and then balance issues. And then also the muscles that they stimulate fade away and degenerate over time as well. So it's also a muscle wasting condition. When I was younger, I could walk, and now I've kind of lost that ability. So I kind of peaked physically when I was about 7 or 8 years old, which I think right. most people can't say. So, yeah.
And then you mentioned earlier that you've actually got metal rods in your back to help supporting your back and stuff like that as well.
Yeah. So part of that muscle degeneration is the muscles that supported my spine weren't supporting it, basically. So it started to curve over time, both right. ways, both always and sideways. It was actually at a right angle in two places before I had the surgery. And then I had two metal rods put in the whole length of my spine. Quite a big operation, 10-hour operation. I couldn't ride for about 9 months afterwards. And then you almost had to relearn how to ride afterwards, because your whole back is just fixed and you don't have that mobility to learn to move with the horse again, it takes a lot of time. So that was definitely an experience.
So that was when you were 14, and you were saying, you just mentioned there that you had to learn to ride again, which suggests you've obviously been riding for quite a long time then. So how did that come about? Are you a horsey family, or was it part of therapy, or how did you get into the riding in the first place?
Yeah, well, my mum used to do show jumping when she was younger. But she had given up a long time before I came into the picture. And it was just a coincidence. I was recommended by a doctor about the age of 3 or 4 that, you know, that horse therapy is good and horse riding is good for physical strength. So I went to my local RDA center, Pennywell's RDA center, and started riding there. And at the beginning, I had two side helpers and a leader. I used to go over jumps like that at the age of 4. And slowly started getting better and stronger and more capable. And I went through kind of the RDA ranks. So the RDA regionals did that. Right. I think it was the Handy Pony at the time. And then at the RDA nationals. And then kind of around the age of 7, 8, or 9, progressed into doing para competition and competing like that. And then just did work my way up through all of the para ranks until we got to 3-star level.
Right. Excellent. So you're at 3-star. So around about what age then did you break through into that three-star kind of level of competition? I remember seeing you a couple of times at Hartbury, maybe 2017, 2018-ish. Is that around the time that you broke through?
So my first time competing at 3-star, I think, was in 2015.
Right.
When I was 18. And then I had like a few years out and then came back again. And that's probably when you saw me in 2018.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really until 2018, 2019 that I started like really making progress on the international scene, if you like.
Yeah. And then we met for the first time in Rotterdam at the 2019 Europeans, which was your big, that was your first kind of intercontinental championships, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was my baptism of fire. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, and what do you remember about that heady week in the sunshine in Rotterdam?
I think the main thing is just the scale of it in comparison to all the 3-stars that we're kind of used to doing. It was, you know, just massive, absolutely massive, and you definitely learn a lot from that from doing it. I was fortunate enough to compete in Doha earlier in that year,
right?
And I think that gave me a lot of kind of preparation going into Rotterdam, because the show they put on there was massive and the arena is massive. And I remember, I mean, that was my first competition 3-star abroad in Doha.
Right.
And I remember going into the arena and thinking, oh, I'll look in the big screen just to use it as a mirror. And then seeing myself and kind of going, oh God, for a second. And I think, so I was fortunate that I think prepped me for Rotterdam quite well. But yeah, in itself, the scale of it is massive, and it's not really something you can prepare for until you've done it, really.
Yeah. And then obviously you're about to make that step up even further when you get to a Paralympics. You know, it's your European. Anyone who goes to a European and then goes to a WEG says that, oh gosh, WEG's so much bigger than the Europeans. And then you go to a Paralympics, and it's like it's a whole other level. So you've got that to look forward to. What's You're obviously, and you're on a new horse now as well, aren't you? So tell us a bit about Charlie, your new ride.
Well, I mean, he's a very special horse. I think anyone who does a grade one test will be able to tell you that to have a horse that has the right temperament to be able to keep their concentration and their focus and kind of look after their rider for the whole duration of a walk test, but also have the quality and the presence to get the top marks is a very special horse. And he used to compete at Grand Prix just a year ago with
Right.
his owner Bronte Watson, and now he's like been working with me, and for the last since November I've been riding him, and it's taken, I mean, normally it takes a really long time for a horse to get used to my aids and the walk test and everything we need to do, but he took to it unbelievably quickly, and
Right.
every single time I think, oh, this is amazing. He's at this amazing level. He goes and breaks it again and comes up with more incredible tests and better performances. So he's a very special horse. I'm very excited to have him going into a games, because I think that's what all riders kind of dream of, is to have a horse like that to go to an Olympics on. So it's all kind of just come together quite nicely.
Yeah, excellent. And how was your, so you got him in, you got the ride on him in November of last year, did you? November of 2020.
Yeah, November of
Right.
2020.
Okay. So how was 2020 for you generally in terms of your sport? Obviously, there were no competitions, but I sometimes find that when I talk to riders, that it almost splits into two camps. There's the camp that says actually it was terrible because we had real momentum developing and then everything was put on hold. And then there's the other camp that says actually, while it was a shame that the games were postponed, the extra year has given me a chance to look at this aspect of how I ride or, you know, that kind of thing. What camp do you fall into?
I definitely think I fall into the second camp. I definitely think, I mean, when the games got postponed, I mean, obviously everyone was gutted because everyone wanted to go. But I sat down with kind of my team, and we said, well, let's use this as an opportunity. There's nothing else going on. Let's just spend the year with our heads down, working to be better, so that we come out next year on fire, and hopefully surprise a few people. And that's what we did. And I looked to find two new horses, and kind of, because I knew that, I mean, I love the two horses that I had before and the one I went to Rotterdam on. But unfortunately, they just didn't have the quality to compete with the top
Yes.
level. So it was, let's get two new horses and let's just work like crazy in order to be ready. And it's paid off massively. And now we're in that position. So for me, the delay is the reason why we're going with such optimism. So it worked out great.
And you talk about that optimism going in. What are you most optimistic about going into Tokyo? What would be a good games for you?
I mean, it's
I mean,
difficult
obviously a gold medal would be a great game, but
to
well,
say. Well, I don't think I stand a
yes.
chance of coming anywhere near Roxanne, but no, I think it's tough, because especially in the grade ones, I mean, in all the grades, but especially the grade ones, the competition is so fierce, and there's so many good riders, and it's kind of very hard to predict how well everyone's going to do. So really, in amongst my team, it's just about getting the best performance that we can do on Charlie. So just put in the best possible test. We know what we can do on our day, and we know how to get the best out of him. So it's just focus on our own job, put in the best performance, put on a bit of a show, and then the rest is up to the judges, and there's not really much else I can do.
And you, yeah, sorry, you mentioned Roxanne just now. So you're grade one, which obviously means you're up against Roxanne Trunnell from the USA, who has got the world record score and is just on fire.
Yeah, she's incredible, yeah.
But you're also up against Sophie Christensen, who's been selected for Team GB, and we haven't seen Sophie for 5 years now since Rio. Essentially, there's been no Europeans for her. Oh, I might be wrong there. She might have done. Anyway, sorry, but we certainly haven't seen her at WEG or at the Europeans in 2019. In fact, no, she didn't even go to Gothenburg, I'm fairly certain. So, you know, we haven't seen what Sophie's been up to, and you never write off Sophie, obviously. She'll have a new horse. You've also got Sara Morganti in your grade, the current world champion. across both the individual and the free. You've got Laurentia Tan, who's never to be underestimated. You've got so many different brilliant riders in that grade. Mm. And then you go and get an 80 plus score in Hartbury. So you add yourself into that mix. You just can't call grade one, can you? It must be one of the most competitive grades.
Yeah, yeah. There's so, as I said, there's so much talent. I think especially in the freestyle, there's probably five riders that are capable of getting 80, or maybe even more. You know, I think that, you know, there are three medals and there are kind of 8 to 10 riders that are probably capable of getting up there. So, you know, it's going to be tight. It's going to probably come down to, you know, who leaves a leg back in a hole or something like that. But that's why you can't, I mean, not really, you know, getting too caught up on what everyone else is doing. It's just, we'll put in our best performance and then wherever we come, we can be proud of that.
How do you manage yourself in a big competition like that? Do you have any kind of superstitions or any routines? Are you listening to massive loud rock music before you go into the arena, or are you nice? Do you take yourself away and be nice and quiet? What's your routine at a big competition?
It's funny to say that when I was a kid, I used to listen to music all the time before I rode, kind of get psyched up. But I've kind of lost that tradition now. I don't tend to do it as much. Now, I'm not really too superstitious. The only one I do have is around magpies. You know, the one for joy, two for joy. It's probably the only. And my mum taught me when I was a kid, she always said, if you ever see one magpie, then look away and look back again, and then you've seen two. So but that's the only superstition that I still carry with me, is if I see a magpie, I always look away and look back again.
And then you've seen it twice.
And I've seen it twice. But no, I don't have anything that's too pressing in terms of superstition. I just, you know, we have a routine that with my training that we go through. We all know our jobs and what we have to do. And you just visualize the test, go through everything you need to go through. And now I think the experience of 2019 has put me in a place where I feel pretty comfortable in most competition environments. And there was a lot of pressure going into, Germany before, and then Hartbury this year.
Yeah.
Being on a top horse going up against Sophie Christensen. And I think all of that just helps you doing it. And I feel pretty good in that respect. I guess it helps competing from the age of 9. You get a bit used to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're going now with a team. So this is really interesting, because this time last year, when teams were being announced before they postponed the games, and I was writing the press release that said these teams have been announced for Tokyo, and Ireland at that point had only two slots. So we were thinking it was going to be yourself and probably Tamsin Addison that would be going. But now you've got a whole team of four of you going, because unfortunately another team, I'm not quite sure who yet, but another team has pulled out. So you're going as a full Irish team, aren't you?
Yeah, we've got four riders going. It's pretty exciting. I'm thrilled about it. Because I think as a team, we've put in so much work over the last few years to kind of bring ourselves back to the kind of success of London. That team was amazing, and in my opinion, I think Ireland should be in amongst the medals as a team. We should be aiming for that. Yeah. And it's nice that we're going, and I think and everyone has improved so much over the last few years. So I'm excited about kind of what we can do. And then also going into the next, the next Olympic cycle, it's a process kind of building a team up to that level. But we're, it's really good that we're all going, and we'll definitely be the loudest ones there, I reckon.
Well, I don't know, you and the Dutch. The Dutch are always quite good at the old support for their team members. What about and then how do you balance? So you work full time, do you work, and then you're riding as well? How do you balance your job as an environmental advisor for a construction company? How do you balance that with training and stuff? What's your day to day routine like?
That's a good question. I'm not quite sure, to be honest. So mainly, working 9 to 5, 5 days a week. I do kind of my gym and my swimming stuff outside, after work.
Yeah.
And then I train at the weekends.
Right.
So I ride at the weekends. So, and my horse, I live in London. Right. My horses are kept down in Bath with Elder Klatsko, my trainer. She's excellent Grand Prix rider, very, very good. And so she does most of the schooling day to day. And I drive down to Bath at the weekend and stay overnight there and ride, and then head back again. And it works really well. But, you know, I always joke with her that I get the good bits because I get to come down at the weekend, ride the horses, say what needs to be better, go away, come back. And they're better the next week. And so I always get the fun bits. But yeah, so it's tough, but yeah, definitely manageable.
Yeah. And then, so you've got Elder as your coach at the moment. You've worked with Michelle Asseline, I understand, when you were much younger.
When I was a kid growing up in kind of Powers, I went over to have some training with him. He's always been one of those people that's offered input just all the way through, whether it be technical advice or just directional support about what direction you should move in and all these things. He's always been someone that's willing to offer a helping hand.
It must be really, it's very lucky to have those kind of people. And you mentioned your team as well and how important it is to have that brilliant team around you. It's not just you, is it? It's everyone around you supporting you as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I liken it to almost like a Formula One team where you have, I'm like the driver, but like, you know, my trainer Elder is almost like the engineer, making sure that the horse is right. And then there's a whole bunch of people that make everything happen. And when you're there, you just see me on the horse, but there's a whole array of stuff going on behind the scenes, which is equally as important. I'm just kind of the thing that I just do the end bit.
And does your company that you work for know that they've got a Paralympian on their hands? Are they supportive of what you're setting out to achieve?
They do. Yeah, they do. No, they are very supportive. And I have enough time in my kind of holiday to go off and do all these things. But they are very supportive. They're a great company to work for. So
Excellent. And then just coming towards the end now, I do have to ask this question. You have the most un-Irish accent for an Irish rider. So where is the connection that gets you to the Irish team?
Yeah, I thought this might be coming. No, my grandma was born in Belfast.
Right.
And my granddad's side of the kind of family originates from Cork. So really, once I got to the age where I kind of had to decide whether I wanted to ride for Great Britain or ride for Ireland, I thought about it a lot, but really, you know, making my grandma proud and riding for Ireland, it just kind of felt right. It was just my gut feeling that this is what, you know, this is where I belonged. Yeah. I remember also watching Helen Kearney at the 2012 Olympics. I was there watching her in the green jacket, and there was just something, it just felt like that was what was right for me.
Yeah, excellent.
That's the connection, yeah.
Is your grandma still around?
She is, yeah. She's very proud of that. Yeah, she's very proud. And that kind of makes it, you know, all makes it worth it.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. And then I guess finally, what do you kind of like to do when you're not riding? Do you have time to do anything? Obviously, I guess you finish work on Friday and then first thing on Saturday morning, you're jumping in the car, driving down to Bath. So I guess
I don't have a lot of free time these days. Recently I've gotten into chess. I think that's my new thing. I think it may have been from watching The Queen's Gambit on Netflix. Have you seen that show?
I haven't, but no, I've heard of it.
So I watched that around Christmas time, and then I used to play chess a bit when I was a kid. I mean, just not properly, but just, you know, as a bit of fun. And I think the like this year in any free time has just been playing way too much chess, which is a bit nerdy, but it's quite good fun.
So. Nerds rule the world. What's about, and then finally, have you got any, you know, if you were, you know, if mid-20s Michael could go back and talk to 9-year-old Michael, what would you say to him?
That's a very good question. I think I would probably say to 9-year-old me, that we made it, and then we finally did it. And then 9-year-old me would probably say back, well, it's about time.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, listen. Brilliant. Well, look, thank you so much for your time. It's a really, I love these little chats where we just talk about people as riders and how it came about and all that kind of thing. So wish you all the very best. Safe travels to Tokyo. I will be down there, so I'll see you there. I'll be talking to you after you've had your rides and stuff. So so all the very best. When do you actually go? Have you got dates or anything yet as to when you fly out?
The horses fly out on the 19th of August.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll go into quarantine in Aachen the week before then, and then we all fly out 18th and 19th of August.
Right. Excellent. Well, look, safe travels and all the very best with it. And we will see you down there. And thanks very much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate that.
Excellent. So thanks, everyone, for listening. As I say every single time, you know the script by now. Tell your friends, subscribe, leave a review, ask me any questions. And thanks for listening. And good luck to you, Michael, in Tokyo.
Thank you.